It's Miss Melissa, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you are listening to Tales from the Tub. This piece is one that I wrote last October for a project called Reality Rights that was hosted by the Literal Challenge. I turned it into them, but I never published it on my blog. There are parts of this that even my mother doesn't know the truth of. It's called Bang Bang, My Baby Shot Me Down. And it's not fiction. I wrote this last October with a brain that was a bit addled and definitely altered from opiate painkillers and actual pain. I had a torn meniscus in my right knee. Surgery took place a week after I wrote this, and I had a stress fracture in the same foot. We were supposed to write a didactic dialogue, an unemotional exploration of a serious issue. In my case, I had an idea for a dialogue on gun violence and gun control, and while the piece wasn't meant to be fiction, I was going to use my recurring android character, Basil, and his actress partner, Zoe, to illustrate both sides of the article. Because moving things into the future, setting them in a world a bit separate from our own, often makes them easier to process. And I use horror and science fiction to process. But then I woke up that October morning to the news that 9 people had been shot at a bar in Kansas City while I was sleeping. At that writing, my country had gone 0 days without a mass shooting. As of today, it's been 50 days, unless you count a family of 5 in Milwaukee, but that was inside their house, and I think from a member of the family, so I'm not counting it. And anyway, the only reason it's been 50 days since the last mass shooting is because schools are closed and most people have been on stay-at-home orders. But I was heartsick then, as I become every time I hear about such an event in the news. And I am incapable of writing a dialogue. Because I don't see another side. Oh, I know my own nephews have hunting rifles. I know that they are good fathers and responsible men, and I know they store their ammunition separately from their actual rifles and would never let their kids touch either until they were old enough to be trained and responsible themselves. But they don't need to hunt to eat. They do it for sport, and this nauseates me. I also know that my brother is a cop and carries a gun, and that as far as cops go, he's one of the good ones. He's not racist or intentionally misogynistic, and he's not sexist, and he genuinely believes he's helping people. I think he actually does help people. And yeah, he has a bit of a hero complex, but a lot of cops do. Like my nephews, my brother does not treat his gun as a toy, but sometimes he jokes about it. "Oh, don't worry, I'm strapped," he'll say if we're in a sketchy neighborhood. And I don't find this funny. Or reassuring. Because, to me, if a cop has to draw a weapon, they've already failed. The situation has already deteriorated. You've already lost. And if your first reaction to being in a neighborhood that isn't upper middle class and white is to be glad you have a gun, I think that says something about you, not the neighborhood. It's easy. It's so easy. To believe that if you haven't felt a bullet whizzing by your cheek, that you haven't been affected by gun violence. But if you live in America, as I do, you have been affected, whether you admit it or not. You're affected because every year there's a ballot measure about open carry or allowing guns on university campuses or adding or eliminating restrictions on who can purchase guns or what kind or how. It's equally easy to believe that Columbine was the first school shooting in the United States. It wasn't. I know of a woman who was held hostage in her high school in 1985, 14 years before the massacre at Columbine. And I was a witness to a shooting at my own high school in 1987. In my case, we were lucky. There were no hostages. There was no lockdown. It was one kid targeted by his girlfriend's brother. The shooter was a member of a gang called SKB, the South Korean Boys Club, and he didn't like that his target was dating his sister. So he pulled his car to the curb outside our school, took aim, and shot a boy named Fong Nguyen at 3:15 p.m. on Thursday, December 17th, 1987. It was the second to last day of classes before our winter break, and the day of all the winter concerts. We were a performing arts magnet school. If you've ever seen an episode of the television show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know that California high schools are not the enclosed prison-like structures that so much of the rest of American students are stuck in. Rather, we have a few buildings connected by breezeways. At 3:15 on a Thursday, the regular students were heading for their cars or their buses, but the performing arts students were crossing the breezeways for a final class. In order to meet our academic requirements and still fit in our arts classes, we had one extra hour of classes every day. I was standing not far from Fong when the gun was fired. A friend of mine from the drama class we were heading to, a friend whose name is absolutely not Julian because I'm only naming the names in the news articles, pushed me to the ground when it happened. When we stood up again, Fong was on the ground and his blood was on our shoes. Julian and I were seniors. Fong was not in the magnet program and was a freshman. Before that day, neither of us even knew his name. Before that day, we were typical American kids who sometimes presented... Before that day, we were typical American kids who sometimes pretended we were holding rifles or pistols when improvising scenes or reenacting favorite bits from action films. Before that day, I had no problem playing video games that involved blasting alien ships out of the sky. And after... The first change was to the orchestra program that night. We'd deleted the March to the Scaffold from our set. It would have been an extremely poor taste. Instead, we played the Ode to Joy, offering it as a song of peace and hope. And the jazz choir sang a song called Family, to remind us that we were, in fact, one family. The second change came with the nightmares. Nightmares I still have. Real gunshots don't sound like the bang bang you hear on television. They're more of a subtle pop. For weeks, firecrackers and backfiring trucks spooked me, and I had nightmares about being shot or being in the way or what would have happened if my friend hadn't pushed me down. In the years since then, I've developed a strong distaste for guns. I do not allow them in my house. I have to state this on invitations because I live in Texas, where open carry is lauded and almost every native has a pistol in her purse. Even my most rational, liberal friends cannot explain why they feel the need to carry. They just do. I feel assaulted sometimes walking into stores. Not by the bubbas with their guns on their hips. For the most part, they're harmless, and honestly, most of the businesses I frequent don't allow open carry. But because of the things like a display I saw in Target during last fall's back-to-school shopping period, it was for bullet-resistance backpacks for kids, and the price tag on them was about $100. I was horrified, putting myself in the place of a parent who couldn't afford that kind of expense. The kind of parent, a single mother or father maybe, who can barely keep a growing kid in shoes and make sure there's healthy food on the table. How would I feel if I were that mother, having to choose between a backpack that might keep my kid alive or putting gas in the car for a week? How would I feel if I were that father, unable to buy it and finding out my kid was the next victim? I grew up in a world where our school's safety drills included marching out for hire drills and warnings like, if there's an earthquake that destroys the stairs, don't use the stairs. I'm not making that one up. My youngest nieces and nephews and my grandnieces and nephews live in a world where they practice hiding in closets and using textbooks as shields and cowering under desks to avoid gunfire. It's so easy to think that if you've never felt blood spatter your skin, you've never been touched by gun violence. But you're wrong. Just by listening to this, you have been, and I have been. And I'm sorry, but I can't write a dialogue about it. The Bathtub Mermaid, Tales from the Tub, is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartell and is recorded and produced using the Auphonic iPhone app and or Audacity. The Bathtub Mermaid Tales from the Tub is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 4.0 International License. This means that you can share it with your friends or repost it as long as you credit me and link to my site. For show notes, including detailed credits and contact information, visit bathtubmermaid.com. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Meliss, that's spelled M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, and Facebook at facebook.com/MissMeliss, again spelled with the Y-S-S-E ending. Thanks for listening, and remember, never let your bathwater get too cold.